This is Solo Travel Talk, the Japan series. Your solo travel advisor and host is Astrid Clements.
Well, 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 here we are again. Astrid is flexing her superpower of hotel selection, even in Japan. The Hotel New Otani is elegant, with traditional gardens, onsen, restaurants, concierge, beauty, and thoughtful touches throughout. Your solo travel advisor, Astrid Clements, is famous for getting a high-quality hotel for her travels, since in the Astrid travel philosophy, your hotel is your home base, a home away from home. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. On this episode of Solo Travel Talk, let us sweep you away to Japan and the elegance of the Hotel New Otani.
Okay, Catherine, before we get into the topic of our show, I want to remind our new and our old listeners to Solo Travel Talk that in the middle of our latest podcast, we throw in a travel tip. And what we say in Louisiana, we give you a little lanyap, something extra that we think solo travelers will benefit from. So this show's travel tip will focus on what is more important, customer reviews or star ratings when selecting lodging. So stay tuned. I think I have some very good insights to this topic that I feel like will be beneficial to solo travelers in picking their lodging options.
And also, Astrid, if they're a new listener, they're going to be intrigued with the fact that this is your superpower, in my opinion, is picking hotels. So we will be revealing all here on this show. So, okay, we got to start off right off the bat. How did you find the Hotel New Otani?
Okay, well, there's no secret sauce to this. It just takes work. And what I typically do is I get on the internet and start Googling like a wild woman. I mean, I Google Kayak, Expedia, Hotel.com, TripAdvisor, Booking.com, JetSetter, Oyster. I look at so many different sites, and a lot of them become redundant. But then when you see certain key hotels keeping popping up, and then new ones that this site has on their site and others don't have on their site. So it really does take time. And that's how I started. But that's how I end up with what I call the it hotel, because I'm always looking for the it hotel. So as you stated in the interview, a wonderful hotel is so important to me as a solo traveler, because an excellent hotel can really make or break your trip. Beautiful surroundings, a top-notch concierge desk, comfortable beds to get a good night's sleep, options to dine or relax that are inside and outside, as well as beauty and wellness facilities provided at the hotel where you're staying, all gives you a real relaxing home base to come back to every day after you've been out exploring. I think it's so important to select a hotel that will help you recharge, relax, and not just someplace to crash. I mean, really, your hotel is part of really the vacation or trip, in my opinion. Also, before I start Googling, I basically set in my mind how much I'm willing to pay per night to spend on my lodgings. And for my Japan trip, I wanted to try to stay in the under $300 a night range. And I want to tell you, that might sound a little pricey to some of our listeners, but lodging in Japan really tends to be very expensive, especially in the five-star category. And it was really one of the reasons why it has taken me so long to go to Japan, because every time I would get on the, it's always $500 a night, just right off the bat. And I was thinking, do I really want to spend $500 a night? And if I stay there for 3.5 weeks, I mean, that's starting to get into some bucks. And am I going to get really a good travel experience from that long and having to spend that much money, plus the expensive flight? Okay, so My focus really is always to find affordable luxury hotels that have cultural authenticity. I'm not just looking for really fabulous 4 or 5 star hotels that many people rate very highly. I am looking for cultural authenticity. To me, there's nothing worse than staying in an overpriced, cold, too brand-oriented luxury hotel. I can't stand that. And, you know, some people like it because they like a certain brand, or they know what they're going to get. I want to go and stay in a place that feels like Mexico City, or feels like Paris, or feels Venetian in Venice. You know, I don't want to go to a luxury hotel that's owned by a foreign corporation that uses certain systems and everything, and it's kind of a hybrid brand, or something that's too modern, that's too generic, that, you know, I'm so used to in the United States. That's not part of what I want to experience when I go to another culture in another place. So I'm really looking for cultural authenticity. So, I mean, I scour the Google sites to find those 5-star hotels that are in my price point now, that have cultural character, that do have certain amount of luxury. Because you can get hotels that really are like reconverted big houses, and one place, funeral home even, but they did a really good job with it. It was a Kessler Hotel in Savannah. It was beautiful.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I love that hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you have to watch out. You know, it could get a little too basic, or not. It doesn't have the luxury that I like. Since Tokyo actually was my first stop on my 3.5-week trip to Japan, I wanted a hotel there that introduced me to traditional Japanese hospitality, which you can read so much about that. In Japan, they have such a high standard of service. And there's a very simple and refined essence to their hospitality style with their cultural things that are all part of it. So, and I must say, Tokyo has many spectacular 5-star hotels, but what I found is, or I knew this before, but what I found again in researching, most all of those hotels have been built in the last 15 to 20 years, and they're all geared really to business travel, because that was the main travel that went to Japan up until the last 5 years. And now Japan really is building their tourism industry. The Olympics will be there next year. They're all fired up. They're really getting the country ready for all these new visitors. There's not as many of these types of hotels that I was looking for, that authenticity with some historical reference with the Japanese hospitality and everything. I mean, I just didn't want to go in one of those business hotels. Besides, those are the ones that are so expensive. I mean, $1,250 a night.
Oh,
I mean, you'll say, oh, yeah, yeah. Really, when you get down to $500 a night in some of those hotels, I mean, they're okay, but oh, my gosh. You know, it's triple there compared to what you get in many other cities. I never like to blow money. I like to have fun, and it costs money, but I don't like to waste money, so that'll turn me off so much I won't go. I hate to say it. But, okay. In my research, though, I found 2 hotels in Tokyo that really caught my interest. One was the Imperial Hotel, and the other hotel was the Hotel New Otani. The Imperial Hotel is really probably the most historic hotel in Tokyo. It's 100 years old. When it was first designed, it was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. I mean, the premier architect in the world at that time. And he created, it really was kind of like a Mayan temple that was blended with Oriental cultural ideas. I mean, he did everything in this hotel, from the furniture to the light fixtures. I mean, it was unbelievable. And it had a fire. They rebuilt, the hotel, but not with the original structure. Now, part of the original structure has been taken down and recreated in another area of Japan. But the Imperial Hotel has been in business for 100 years, and you do see in the hotel many Frank Lloyd Wright's aesthetics, from the chair designs, light fixtures, etc. But it's not what he did, okay? But what they really pride themselves, besides the long history, is their prestige is based on really their first-class hospitality, which they tout as being refined and impeccable, restrained elegance at its best. And this hotel, the rich and famous, the heads of state, royalty, they've all come through there. So it has a long reputation of serving the elite of the world. It also has an award-winning Michelin star restaurant in there. It has a sophisticated bar that has a history called the Old Imperial Bar. It has a tea room that they have tea ceremonies every day there. Of course, they have spa, beauty salon, indoor pool, and it's in a great location. It's really almost in Ginza, which is a great area. I mean, it's a very ritzy area, lots to do there. Really, I almost stayed there. And one of the things, too, is they, you know, in talking about their traditional Japanese hospitality, the staff is clad or wear kimono. And they are so exacting the way they make the beds. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything. I mean, it is, it's unbelievable. Well, I almost stayed there. But the other hotel, the Hotel New Otani, it likewise had a significant history. And it focused on traditional Japanese hospitality. And the hotel was built in 1964. So, you know, it's not 100 years old, but it's getting some age on it. And it was really created to house all the visitors that were coming to the first Olympics that was in Tokyo. So the gentleman who owned the property where the government wanted this hotel to be, they wanted Yanataro Otani to build the finest hotel in the Orient. And that's what he did. 1964 is when he started on it. And I mean, it is something else, this hotel. So I'm going to describe all the hotel's fabulous amenities in the next segment of the show. But what was really the deciding factor in selecting the new Hotel New Otani was its most unique feature. It had a 10-acre, 400-year-old Japanese garden. And when I first read this, I thought, what? There's a garden? A Japanese garden? And I looked at the pictures, and it was just, it was spectacular. I said, this is unbelievable. I mean, first of all, nature is so prominent in Japan's Zen culture. And to have a gorgeous Japanese garden to enjoy at the hotel where I would be staying, I mean, that was compelling. I thought, you know, the Hotel Imperial, it's got all this history, and it's got, you know, some nice outdoor spaces, but it doesn't have this fabulous traditional Japanese garden that was over 400 years old. Plus, TripAdvisor did rate the hotel's garden as number 5 on its top 20 free attractions in Japan in 2018. So, I mean, you know, everybody raves about this garden. And it, both hotels were priced at $300 a night. And I was traveling kind of like a little bit on the shoulder season. So I got that advantage. So the price point was basically the same. The garden was the deciding factor. I mean, you know, if it wouldn't have had a garden, I'd probably stayed at the Imperial Hotel, but it did. So to answer your question specifically, I found the Hotel New Otani by doing a lot of research on my top 5 travel accommodation sites. Then I read pages of reviews on each one of them, because those reviews are so critical, because that's when somebody will say, well, they have roaches here. It's beautiful, but, you know, or something like that. And then I watch a lot of YouTube videos. Now, I've talked about this as one of my secret weapons in deciding where to stay, what to do. I watch a lot of YouTube videos, whether it's done by the hotels or the restaurants or whatever. I'm trying to decide whether I want to go there, or it's just done by bloggers or just people. You know, you get a lot of discernment when you watch these videos. And, you know, you can look at the hotel's pictures, whether it's done by the hotel or independent pictures, and you can kind of tell that from that, and especially I can tell whether this hotel is authentic or it's just too done or whatever, okay? But if it passes that test, or what I call the authenticity smell test, then I really read and study everything presented in the hotel's website. I cross-reference it with the customer reviews and other articles and independent blogs. So really, this is how I mine for gold, and I find that IT hotel. And this is how I found the hotel New Otani. So it takes a lot of time and effort to do this. But I have done it for so many years. Yeah. I just have a feel for it now, as well as its work.
And plus, when we do these podcast episodes about the hotels, I feel like this is your gift to everybody, because you've done all the work, and then our listeners get to scoop up and get the great recommendation here.
Yes.
They don't have to do all the same research that you
yes.
do. And I also really love is when I was preparing for the show and I got to go to the Hotel New Otani website. Whenever you find these IT hotels and I go to their websites, I'm just always like, oh my gosh, look at this place. So the Hotel New Otani was like its own little mini city. It just looked so incredible. So you've kind of given us a hint for some of the amenities that were there, but let's keep it going and let's get into all the good stuff that the Hotel New Otani offers.
Okay. It's really one of the most unique hotels I have ever stayed in anywhere in my last 45 years of solo travel. For starters, and you kind of touched on it, it's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it is huge. It's similar to the hotels that you find on the Vegas Strip, Las Vegas Strip, but not like the Vegas hotels. It doesn't feel huge. Mm. It's not overwhelming. It's definitely not glitzy or cheesy. You don't know that this hotel is so enormous. You really don't, which is wonderful. And there are uniform doormen who greet you right upon arrival. Like, you know, I got out of the cab. I walked in. And there was this beautiful, huge flower arrangement around an O, but I took it as a welcoming kind of circle of whatever. You know, the circle is always a symbol of life going around, but it was this beautiful, gorgeous flower arrangement of yellow orchids. I mean, you can't imagine. It was wonderful. The doorman opened the door. They got my bags. Then a uniform attendant, just like what you see in the Peninsula hotels all over the Orient, comes in and also greets you, walks you to the desk. I mean, I just thought, oh my gosh, this is uptown. I mean, yeah. I wasn't picked up in the Rolls Royce, but I thought to myself, I'm going to like it here.
Mm.
But just a little basic information why I say this hotel is huge. First of all, it has two towers. The original tower, which has 1,479 rooms, and then you have the new tower that has 2,768 rooms. Now, that is huge. I mean, that is so huge you can't believe it. But you don't see a lot of people all on top of each other or anything like that. Because, first of all, they have 37 restaurants and bars. They have a huge shopping arcade underneath. And then they have all these little shops and boutiques in down the halls, hallways. And they have all these little kind of paths all over, and there's all kinds of different things in there that you can explore, whether it's restaurants or shops or whatever. So, and then they have three spas, basically. The Golden Spa, which is focused on wellness and beauty. But then they have one that's just oriental, and then another one that's kind of maybe not quite as much in wellness as the Golden Spa. They have a barbershop. Oh, and I mean, this barbershop, they specialize in those hot shaves. And I mean, let me tell you something. You go to a man going to that barbershop will be clean as a whistle, look like $1 million, and pampered like you can't ever imagine. And then they have a hair salon, a photo studio. You know, it's very popular when people go to Japan, especially women, to take photos in kimono. And so they will get you all dressed in kimono and put the makeup on if you want to look like a geisha or a maiko or just like a normal person. I mean, you can do all kinds of photo ops. And what's so nice, you can do the photos in the garden, in the Japanese garden. And they, you do see that. And it is special. I mean, it is. I mean, if you're into that kind of stuff, I mean, that's a once in a lifetime kind of experience. So they have this photo studio there. They have dentists, doctor's offices. In the event that you got sick, or you lost a crown, or anything that happened, no problem at the hotel, Otani. They can take care of it immediately. They have a post office, flower shop, travel agency. They have a rose garden that is gorgeous, and they do daily yoga in the rose garden there. No charge. And a garden chapel where they have Sunday services every Sunday. And the beautiful Japanese garden that I talked about. And they even have a luxury car dealership. So if you want to buy a Rolls Royce, a Bentley, or a Ferrari, you can buy it at the Hotel Otani. So when you say it's a city within a city, you got it.
Yeah.
You don't even have to go anywhere in Tokyo. It is so unbelievable, but even though it's so huge, it doesn't feel overpowering. Wow. That was hard for me to digest how they did this, but it must be something in the way the Japanese do space and everything. You know, they don't want anything to be too big or whatever. They feel it must be something that it creates the wrong energy or something. I don't know. So the Japanese refinement and understatement really is felt throughout. So you never feel overwhelmed by the size, which to me was really interesting. Because my thought was this hotel is like a size of a Vegas hotel.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel at all like that. Mm. Okay, so now for the features that make the Hotel New Otani what I call a wow hotel, because it really is a wow hotel. There's so many different types of rooms for starters. I mean, you know, you can get the basic standard double. You can get a double suite. You can get a junior suite. It can be in modern or traditional Japanese decor with the low furniture and the food. You can even get futon beds, the ones that with the pod-looking beds on the floor and the rice pane windows. I mean, it is there at the New Otani. And since I'm a solo traveler, I usually opt for the standard double, really the cheapest room, because I want five-star luxury, but I don't need anything else, you know. But when I checked in, I had a stroke of luck. I really did. The desk clerk, instead of putting me in a standard, the modern double room that I had reserved, the desk clerk offered me to upgrade to the Edo floor, and it was at no extra charge. And the Edo floor is a floor that has rooms that really have the traditional Japanese elements to it, but they're modern. They're not like the real with the low furniture and everything. I mean, I was elated because these rooms are very special. There are only a couple of floors of them, and they're for the smallest one at $100 a night more. So they just upgraded me. So, I mean, I felt like, ooh, this is a good sign. Let me kind of explain to you the uniqueness of these rooms on the Edo floor. First of all, the website, the hotel's website describes them as traditional Japanese ambiance fused with modern comfort. These floors are all very new in terms of their renovation. But the first thing you notice when you go into the room to the left, you have your bathroom. And the bathroom is really different. Number one, the way the Japanese bathe, and they are clean freaks in Japan. The Japanese people are as clean as any culture in anywhere in the world. Well, bath part of your bathroom, you've got an area where there's a shower head. You have a little bucket. You have like this little stool, this scrub brush, and then this long narrow towel. And then on the other side, you have a real cypress soaking tub. So the way that you take your bath or you wind down your day with a bath is you shower, then you take this fabulous organic hard-pressed soap that you have in the bathroom that you can wash your hair with, your body with, everything. And you scrub yourself down, you sit on the little stool. That's the way the Japanese do it. You don't have to sit on the stool. And they have the bucket filled with warm water. And so you scrub yourself down like scrub-a-dub-dub. Then you take the bucket and you push it over you. Then after you're all rinsed off, you get in the soaking tub, this cypress tub that smells divine. And what the Japanese do is you soak in there for about 10 minutes. Then after that, you towel off, get your robe on, and you drink a cup of sake. And that's part of the room. You don't have to pay for the sake. Every night doing that, that was something else. On top of, they give you freshly cleaned and pressed pajamas every night. They put them on your bed. So you don't have to pack pajamas. When you stay in one of these rooms, pajamas are complimentary. And let me tell you something. 25 years ago or prior to that, every hotel you used to go in, and even some on the airplanes, you had pajamas. They gave you pajamas. It was no just bathrobes and plush towels. They even provided the pajamas. So this is the type of service and hospitality you get here. I mean, that just tells you this is something else. And then the other things in the bathroom besides the fabulous towels, they give you all the typical five-star amenities with the shower caps and the cotton Schwabs and the sewing kit. I mean, you have it all here. They don't forget any. They don't skimp on any on any of that. So that's the bathroom. That's it starts it. Then all of the fabrics and everything they use are as natural as possible in the room. They also have like the artwork is kind of like a combination of calligraphy and, it's a lot of black and white and objects. It's not actually calligraphy, but it's very Japanese of looking feel to it. And then you have all the modern things like the flat screen TVs, the iPads, of course, the in-room little refrigerator, something to make tea with. Mm. You've got your safe. All the modern stuff. And in my particular room, I had the most beautiful view of a part of the garden and then the skyline of Tokyo. So this room is really a hybrid of traditional Japanese elements. And, oh, I forgot to talk about the bed. Oh, let me tell you, beds in Japan, for general, are hard as rocks. You might as well be sleeping in the futon on the floor because it feels like it. But these were very high-quality mattresses, not the softest, but not hard as a rock. And they have an underpad, of course, the high-count sheets, wonderful pillows. And the pillows can make up for when the bed's a little too hard. So I must say, I mean, every night I love coming back to my room. It was so comfortable. It wasn't too big. It wasn't too small. That soaking in the tub, it was great. That's all I can say. I just loved my room there. And so that gives you the first kind of glimpse of how this hotel is just, it really is historic, but it's also very much evolving with the times without losing the best of what's Japanese. And I think one of the secrets to this hotel, and I probably wanted to mention this later, but I'm thinking about it now, is this hotel is still owned by the Ohtani family.
Yeah.
And I have found that when hotels are owned by a family through the generations, and they have maintained their five-star level, and they haven't been bought by huge foreign, they have something extraordinary. And I end up a lot of times landing at these places. So make note of that. When you are reading stuff on the website, if it says third generation or something, and it's still this intriguing and this wonderful, it is something really good going on there. Because that can't last anymore. Now, to the restaurants. There are so many restaurants that are fabulous at the hotel at New Ohtani. I mean, I'm just going to highlight the ones that I went to because I didn't eat every meal.
And there's, like, you said, what, 37?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But I think there's probably more. It just seemed like there were more, but that's what it says on the website. But I have to go back several times to, you know, continue to try them all out. But so if you want to know all the restaurant choices before you go, if you decide to stay there, just go on the website and read about it because they talk. They give you good pictures, and they give you exactly what makes this one unique. And because I think they have like 6 Japanese restaurants and 6 Chinese restaurants and all kinds of stuff. Okay, the first restaurant that I want to highlight, and this is kind of one of the bigger restaurants that lots of people go through. I mean, everybody who stays there will eat or have a drink in what's called the Scenic Garden Lounge Restaurant, because this has the huge picture windows that overlook the garden, that bring the garden almost into your space while you're eating. So it is like, it's a great place to dine or have a drink. And it's truly one of the favorite spots in the hotel. But it's elegantly decorated, but it's also comfortable. So, you know, it's not like too fancy or too casual. It features live piano music. Like it starts usually after afternoon tea, I think. And it have a beautiful, like, acrylic clear piano in there. I think it's Yamaha or something like that. It doesn't look like it's crystal, but the whole room is just, it's cosmopolitan, but it's Japanese, and you walk in and all these gorgeous, beautiful flower arrangements around. It was right at cherry blossom season, so they had all this pink everywhere. I mean, it was wonderful. Well, you could have small plates there, full menu. They even have a great breakfast buffet a lot of people like, afternoon tea, evening dinner, just drinks, whatever. And you're right there, and you watch this beautiful garden. It's right there for you. It's just wonderful. I mean, my first meal after I had flown for I don't know how many hours, I was like jet lag big time. And, you know, I needed to eat something to try to start getting on really in sync with Japanese time. I went down there, and I decided to have a club sandwich. I didn't even want to dive into Japanese food. I just needed a club sandwich. So I got a club sandwich and some fruit, and I think it was some kind of flavored tea. And the sandwich was just absolutely perfect. It was just as good a club sandwich as I've ever eaten anywhere in the world. And I love club sandwiches, but a good one, whew, is really good, especially at the right time. It's kind of like a hamburger or cheeseburger hitting you at the time where you need it. It's kind of, you know, kind of like that. But I sat there and looked at that garden. I hadn't been down there yet, but I was looking at it. I was in a trance almost. Mm. And it really was a memorable travel moment for me. I thought, I am so blessed to be able to travel. And now I'm in Japan and I'm in this hotel and I'm looking at this fabulous garden. I mean, really, I was just flat high and no alcohol. No. I mean, it was really, so That's a great place to dine. Okay. Then that evening, I was still kind of wired. So I decided I'm going to go have a glass of wine at one of the bars. And, you know, one of my big things about a hotel, whether I really like it, is if I can go into the lounge and feel comfortable. Because as a solo female traveler, the last thing you want to do is to go into a lounge where you feel uncomfortable. Whether, you know, if people aggravate you or try to talk to you and you don't want to do that, or you just feel out of place, or it just doesn't, it's just not right, you know? But I don't like to go to my hotel room and drink a glass of wine there. So they recommended the Bar Capri. Oh, this bar is like, I mean, it's as good as a bar I've ever been to. Paris, London, anywhere. You walk into this, and it's kind of, it's you know, lightly lighted. It's kind of, you know, dark, but not super dark. You know, all the waiters are tuxedo clad. And you come in, and you see this fabulous oil mural on the wall behind the bartenders of this scene in Capri. And it was done by a famous, well, not super famous, but an expressionist painter. It's gorgeous. I mean, this is just stunning. So this, I mean, this takes you to fantasy thoughts, you know. So you sit there and, you know, they bring you like the little, the bar, you know, nuts and stuff like that. And they're very attentive. They come to you as they see that maybe you need some attention. And the bartenders, they actually have supposedly, they're award-winning bartenders. They make their own cocktails. So, you know, this is very high class if you want a lounge. You know, and the Imperial Hotel I was telling you about, they have that famous old Imperial Bar. I thought, ooh, maybe that has a little bit more history to it. Mm. And a few more drinks. And a few more, you know, elites going through there or whatever than the Bar Capri at the Hotel New Otani. But it doesn't get any better than that. So I loved it there. I mean, I was so comfortable every night. And they were just so nice. And, you know, they didn't say, oh, here she comes again. You know, they would sit me in a nice place, kind of, you know, secluded, but not out. So it was really nice, and they have live music at night, and it's a great place to have a glass of wine or two and kind of think about your day, or if you, you know, at that time you want to check your text messages or whatever, and, you know, you just follow the news. And I did it all. I even wrote in my journal. I mean, so it was just wonderful. Now, right off of that, if you want to do karaoke, you can go karaoke.
Oh, boy.
Now, it's going to cost you something. Oh, the Japanese are crazy about karaoke. Karaoke, they are love it. They love it. And I think that kind of doesn't fit because they're very quiet people, a little bit shy to themselves. They love to go on there and just sing away.
I mean, when it comes to the karaoke, go for it.
So you can karaoke at the Hotel New Otani if you want to. So it's a great place. If you enjoy, you know, a glass of wine, you can feel comfortable there. And the setting is so out of this world, sophisticated but relaxed, perfect. I mean, if there's a perfect bar, the Bar Capri is about as perfect as you can get. Okay, then there was a restaurant called Ranson, and that sounds kind of bad, Ranson. But it was very small, and they have a lot of little small restaurants in the hotel, which I like, you know, because you don't get all these people in there, and, you know, a lot of action going on. It's just small, kind of quiet, sedated, with a certain special type of cuisine, maybe just sukiyaki or, you know, a certain kind of sushi and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's a lot of little specialty restaurants, which I think is great, okay? Well, this one, it was a traditional Japanese restaurant, and it was served only at a bar. I mean, there were a couple of small tables there, but it's really around the bar because it was so beautifully decorated, very simplistic with a few things kind of in a big a bookshelf that was built in. And they were very artistic. I know they had some kind of meaning with, you know, life and food and something, but, you know, I didn't have any idea because it was Japanese kind of calligraphy stuff. But you sit at this bar, but you go in, first of all, and they have those hanging kind of like half curtains that you go in, so Japanese. And then you sit at the bar, and you watch them prepare your food, your meal, totally. So you sit at the bar and you watch them make your whole meal. Now, you can't get any fresher than that. And it's very basic Japanese food, but it's very artfully done. It was a kind of combination of traditional and like very artful presentation. To tell you the truth, I had no idea what I was eating. I just kind of said, well, I want this, this, and this, but I really didn't know. And there were all these little small plates. It was fabulous. I mean, first of all, I didn't really have any real basic knowledge of Japanese food and the effort that goes in the preparation as well as the presentation. I kind of knew something about it, but I had no idea. So this was really, you know, an educational experience for me to sit there, have lunch. I was blown away. I was blown away by the flavors, by the variety of dishes, by the exquisite diligence in watching them make it. And then how restful this whole place was. I mean, you know, I was just wanting to eat sushi. But I ended up eating a smorgasbord of all these small plates. And, you know, I really got the real kind of introduction that the Japanese are refined eaters. And this restaurant served as, you know, my, I'd say, educational eating experience early on in my trip. I really kind of began to see it like it's more than just sushi in Japan. So this restaurant was wonderful. And if you want to kind of get into really food and eating in Japan, listen to my solo travel talk podcast on Japanese food. It's called, isn't it, Catherine? It's more than just sushi.
It's
something?
More than sushi, yeah.
Yeah. I go into all kinds of stuff.
Oh boy, yeah.
Yeah. You know, how they prepare it, why they do it certain ways, why they eat what they eat, spirituality involved in creating the food. And it just, it's a fascinating thing.
I mean, listen hungry. That's my one more.
The food in Japan is as good as it gets. I mean, it's fantastic. Okay, then there was a restaurant that I ate in, and it was actually my last night. I wanted to do something like, you know, I decided that I don't care. I'm going to spend some money on this dinner. I want it to really be good. So I ate at Okahan, and it is a restaurant that specialized in sukiyaki as well as shabu shabu or whatever they call it, dishes. But this is where they use very high quality beef. And I mean, when I tell you expensive, it is out of sight, out of this world, expensive beef. They prepare it with carefully selected fresh vegetables at your table. And sukiyaki is really one of Japan's most famous dishes. And these, chefs who, mine was a female chef and she was clad in kimono, you know, they come and they prepare the whole dinner at your table. I mean, it is like some kind of well-choreographed type of Asian performance, the way that they cook this meal, how they just pick up the ingredient. Everything was like a flow of, I mean, it was amazing. Plus, the decor in this restaurant is traditional Japanese. You sit at the low tables, and you have to put your legs to the side. You take off your shoes, the tatami mats, the rice paint, kind of, well, they weren't windows. They were kind of like fake, panels. It was as Japanese a feel interior as you can get. This meal was as memorable as I wanted it to be because it was expensive. But it was the real thing. And, I really loved it. I loved it. From the ikebana flower arrangement to the other guests that were in there. And everybody was probably having the same reaction that I had. This food is this is so delicious. It's hard to fathom that you're eating something so good. So that was one of the restaurants. Then there's another really great restaurant. Now, it's not so great for its food, but the view, first of all, there's a 360-degree view of the skyline of Tokyo. But the real draw is you can see Mount Fuji from this restaurant if it's a clear day. Now, there's not a lot of places in Tokyo that you can see that. You can go to the Sky Tower and see it if it's a clear day. And there's but in your hotel, if you want to go up and have, lunch and look at Mount Fuji, or in the late afternoon, have a drink, and there is the symbol of Japan there, which is, it's Mount Fuji just excites. That's all I can say. And it's right there in your hotel. You can do it. So if you don't have the opportunity to see Mount Fuji any other time when you're in Japan, if the weather's right, you'll see it at the Sky Bar and it's a Sky Lounge and restaurant there. But they have you can order from the menu. They do have a buffet. They've got kind of one section that's a little bit more like a lounge part, but it's not sectioned off too much that way. There's no walls or anything like that. This is special, and this was original to the hotel. Mm. I know this was Otani's, crown, because it's around like the O, the O, so, oh yeah, everything. He's got it. He's got these subtle O's all over. That kind of tells you how special this hotel, or so many aspects of this hotel. It's one of a kind, really, and I'd say not just in Japan, in the world. But then they also have this fabulous French restaurant if you really want French cuisine. They've got Trader Vic's. They've got other Western, steak. I mean, you can get whatever you want here. Chinese, lots of Chinese, and cafes, coffee shops, So you are not going to be disappointed by your restaurant choices in the Hotel Otani, because they're from all price ranges, but the food is excellent in every one of them. So, okay, now moving on to some more amenities. And I must tell you, this podcast is going to be a little long-winded, but this hotel is so unique that, it would do a disservice if I didn't mention some of this and really paint the picture and let you know why this place is something else. Mm. Okay, shopaholics, beware. Now, Mr. Otani must have knew in the beginning that one of the ways that you're going to really make this place great is to have great shopping. And he did it. There are oodles. They're just oodles of specialty stores, And what I like so much about it, shopping is almost becoming a thing of the past because people are just basically shopped out, okay? So for people who really like to shop, it's harder for you to turn them on because they've just done so much. But let me tell you, this place is tempting. It's still very tempting because there's so many of these little boutiques that have real specialty items. Mm-hmm. Like there's one boutique that makes Japanese purses, and they're beautiful, handmade purses. Then you have your high-end kimono or different types of Japanese traditional clothing or fabrics, you know, textiles or even accessories that you can buy. You might not want to buy full kimono, but you might want to buy the little purse. And you know this is going to, it's good quality because there's nothing that's not good quality in the Hotel Ohtani. Then they have all kinds of Japanese and contemporary clothing shops. And the Japanese are very good designers. They're modern, contemporary clothes. They have beautiful lines. And it's very interesting. They're simplistic, but there's it's a different look. Their clothes seem to me to be not as, they're structured, but they're not tight. It's something about it that have fluid, but they have a line to it or something. It's beautiful. So they have all kinds of those shops, and it can be from moderately priced to very expensive. Antique shops. Oh, they have antique shops there. Oriental antiques, Western antiques, and a fabulous antique jewelry store. If you like antique jewelry, which that is one of my weaknesses, I love antique jewelry. I love to go to all the shops. I don't even have to buy. I just love it because there's usually so much thought behind a lot of these period pieces, and the pieces were made specifically for someone to celebrate something, and I love all that. So they have a beautiful antique jewelry store there. And then they have, you know, your typical high-end and costume jewelry. So if you love jewelry, phew, you're not leaving there without buying something. Also, they've got a first-class souvenir shop. And, you know, there are souvenir shops, and then they're the real souvenir shop. You know, and I'll never forget in China. I mean, you know, you see all kinds of, you know, cheap kind of souvenir stuff. But my, I had this private guide that I had hired in Beijing. And, oh, she wouldn't let me buy anything bad. I mean, you know, she said, "Whoa, no, you know." But at the last day, she says, "I'm going to take you to a place that only certain people are allowed to go to. And this is some of the finest things that we sell that are from China that, you know, you're lucky to be able to get into." And let me tell you something. That was some kind of souvenir shop. They had beautiful things there that were all works of art. So there are souvenir shops, and then there are souvenir shops. Well, the Hotel Ohtani has a beautiful one, and it's got beautiful things. So you've got that. Then you have a bookstore. Now, how many hotels do you go to that have a full bookstore? That, of course, have Japanese books, but they also have books and lots of books in English and in different languages. I mean, I thought that was amazing. I mean, really, that is so unique now. Mm. And then, you know, you've got all kinds of food and beverage shops. You can buy sake, chocolates, Godiva, you know, they have a French sweet shop. And then you can get handmade things, you know, to order, all kinds of stuff. So, like the plethora of restaurants, there are so many shops here that, you know, there's no way I can talk about it. And if you really have any desire to, the website will tell you everything about all the shops. But be forewarned, it's really hard to resist buying something at the hotel, New Ohtani. You're just going to just do it. And I must say, even though this was my first stop in my Japanese trip, there was one store that these older Japanese ladies manned, and they were in kimono. And one of them was so old, and she looked like she must have been the original owner when it started, or she was now the owner's grandmother. She was in there every time I walked past it, whether it was 8 o'clock in the morning or it was 11 o'clock at night. Their door, their little bin was still open. She was sitting there. I mean, it was amazing. And they sold beautiful things. And I bought these handmade Japanese pashminas they're beautiful, for my mother and my sisters. They were not expensive, but they were just so refined looking and very Japanese. So great shopping. All I can say is great shopping. So before I go to the coup de grace or the hotel's magnificent Japanese garden, I really want to talk a little bit about the health and wellness and the beauty facilities there, because really they are fabulous. They're really fine too. They've got 3 spas, you know, 2 health and beauty and 1 strictly oriental massage. But the one I went to, well, I shouldn't say, I went to 2 of them. One, the oriental massage. After the 5th day, my feet hurt so bad. So it was like 8:30 at night and I was craving a foot massage. So I went to the bigger spa. They had already closed. So I went to this other one and they were almost closing. I said, oh, I need a foot massage. They were so sweet. They said, okay, come on in. Great foot massage. That's exactly what I needed. Somebody just to bear down on everything that hurt. But I went to their Fortuna Wellness and Beauty Spa. And this one, I mean, it specializes health and beauty services, acupuncture, reflexology, healing stone therapy, body scrubs, shiatsu massage, oodles of facial types. I mean, you know, you got it there, okay? And I have to say that since my visit to China, I really got into Eastern medicine. This was, you know, alternative medicine is becoming more and more kind of used in conjunction with Western medicine. So, you know, me always being curious and wanting to live to be 100 and looking for the fountain of youth. When I was in China, I wanted to go to a Chinese doctor. So I was staying at a wonderful hotel, the Fullerton Hotel in Beijing. And I had a really nice experience. The assistant manager came to me when I was eating breakfast and asked to join me. And he was wondering if I was enjoying my stay and is everything, you know, are you doing what you want to do in Beijing? Just wonderful hospitality. And he asked me, he said, is there anything special that you'd like to do that? And I said, you know, I want to go to a Chinese doctor. I want to have an evaluation, like a checkup or something by, no problem. He said, no problem. So he lined up for a female Chinese doctor to come to my room and give me a analysis of my health. And what they do, they look in your eyes and they do all these different things, okay? And so she told me, you're in good shape, especially for your health, but your kidneys need a little attention. So she said, what I want to do is I'd like to give you some acupuncture. And all I could think about is everything that I had read about, oh, don't go to the Chinese hospitals. They use dirty needles, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was thinking, oh, my God. But something just said caution to the wind. You know, this lady, I mean, I had a lot of confidence in her, and I didn't think the hotel was going to send me something that was going to, you know, knock me off or make me sick for the rest of my life. So I said, okay, let's do it. So she came in for 3 nights, and I mean, she needled me up from head to toe. I'm serious. But it really did make me feel better. I don't know exactly what it did, but from that point on, I really have done acupuncture. So at the Fortuna Spa, they offered full body acupuncture is one thing, and then they offered facial acupuncture. And all I could think of is I have been wanting to do that. I've read about it in Town and Country in some of the snazzy magazines that facial acupuncture is really good. It's kind of like a mini facelift, blah, blah, blah. I said, I'm going for it. We're doing facial acupuncture too. And I have to tell you, I do think I could tell that slide in the bottom of your face, it looked like it really did help it. And Catherine, I know you said I looked different when I came. Let me tell you something, you know, and I've been looking for it now that I'm home, somebody to do it. I haven't found it yet, but that was one of the the unique services that they had. And I did it, and I thought it was really good. I thought it made a difference. The other thing that I did there was I went to the session called Shimizu Bodywork. And this is full body adjustment technique that focuses on your feet. And I have terrible feet. But it believes that, or the principle is proper balancing of feet is the key to natural health and beauty in pain-free existence. Very Japanese. Everything's got to be natural, you know. So the procedure is 1 hour, and it helps restore your feet to the proper alignment, which is supposed to reduce stress and really, you know, just kind of put you back in the right balance. And it was a very interesting experience. Not only did they do things with my feet, but they took my arms and kind of made them go full circle, my legs all the way around. I mean, they were making my body kind of do all these different kind of contortions, kind of like Tai Chi or something, but they were doing it in a certain way, you know? I mean, they were trying to get me back into perfection, I guess. And then at the end, he said, look, I'm going to give you this ball because you really need to do this certain thing with your feet on this ball. It was another totally unique first-time experience that I'll never forget it. And I don't do the ball thing religiously, but if I have the opportunity to do that again, I will do it. Because there was a slight, what I could tell, a lack of that intense kind of ache. It took it away. It dulled it. So those are the two unique services that you get there that I thought were fantastic. Okay. So you don't have to worry about spa or wellness. They got it covered there. Now, for the fabulous garden. And really, it is really the thing that, as long as that garden is there, I mean, that hotel can be, you know, go to, you know what, people will still go there because that garden is like, it's like a sanctuary. It's like a spiritual, you know, place. And I think because it's been there for so long and there's so many people that have come through it. And, you know, when there's so many people that come through a certain place, especially if it has a spiritual orientation, there's a lot of deep thought there. The energy is different there, you know. And especially these gardens are always constructed to foster that, either release of something that's burdening you or help giving you strength. There are lots of different things. So this garden is something to die for. And really, no description I can do, really, will do it justice. I can try to paint the picture, of which I will, but I wrote here, it's a magical area. And you really have to go there to understand the beauty and why it makes this hotel so over-the-top special. So know that. I'm going to describe it, kind of. But you have to, you can go see the pictures, you can YouTube videos, but to be there takes on a whole new level. It was originally created by a samurai, a lord, and this was during the Edo period where it was very... All the samurais, they wanted to have their own personal gardens where they recited and wrote poetry, and they, you know, watched the stars at night, and they communed with the spirit, and they renewed themselves, and they bathed in what they felt like the spirituality of nature was. So they wanted to have their own place. This is how this garden started. It was a samurai garden with that in mind. Then after World War II, Yanatari, he acquired this land. And he made it his home. This was his home. He had no idea there was going to be a hotel there. But fate stepped in and the Japanese government approached him. And they asked him to create the finest hotel in the Orient here. And, you know, I mean, I guess you can't say no, but that's exactly what he did. And he decided that he was not going to destroy the garden. that the hotel, the garden was going to be the focal point of the hotel, which, you know, that just tells you the whole essence of how this place evolved. So some of the elements in this 10-acre paradise, first of all, they have, and I talk about these Zen gardens, which I had such a difficult time in relating to, you know, rocks and boulders and pebbles. Just it's hard for me to get in tune with. It just really is. But they have, well, they have several little mini gardens within this whole big garden. And a lot of Japanese gardens have that. But this one area is strictly Zen garden. And it, you know, it has all the little pebbles that are, you know, raked in different ways and this kind of thing. But it has kind of as the main focal point, the largest Akadama stone in the world. This is this huge, it looks kind of like jade, like a combination of jade and granite or something. But people come there and they stand in front of this stone. They touch this stone. They hug this stone. I mean, this is like, this is the big one. And it's right there in that hotel. It's really, it's like having a humongous rare diamond right there, or something like that precious. And it has a spiritual essence, the energy and everything that the Japanese treasure. They feel like this, when something is so unique like that, the energy and the essence of it is very good. So you have that in their Zen garden there, okay? Then you have a beautiful Seizen or Seizen pond, which is, it's this floating pond, and it has 350 more multicolored koi, and they're just all swimming around. Mm. It has an old bonsai tree that's very little, that's over 1,000 years old. This tree in right in kind of an island part of this pond. And then they have like seasonal fowl that come in here. You're getting the picture. It is something else, okay? Then they have a beautiful Taikobashi Bridge, which is a stunning scarlet bridge that goes over the pond. I mean, it is stunning. It's a focal point. Lots of people take pictures there. Of course, I did, but they have the kimono professional. I mean, it's just beautiful. It's beautiful. And this is a big garden. It's not too small, so you got plenty enough space to kind of walk on all the paths and not be around anybody else or anything like that. Then they have lots of, well, not lots, but they have some antique, highly prized. I mean, I don't know how valuable these stone lanterns are in pagodas that are kind of spread out through the garden, but they're supposed to be like really valuable. I mean, like old, and they're in here, and they have a presence. I mean, it's not just like something you'd see at one of these, you know, garden ornament shops with, you know, statues and stuff that you can see on the side of the road. I mean, these are like the super real thing. Then you've got another thing. It's just astounding. They have a waterfall in there. They have a waterfall, and the Japanese love running water. It's something about running water they love. They have this 6-meter-high waterfall, and it just feeds into all of these other little waterfalls, and this water is floating all through these little streams all in the garden. I mean, it's magical. Mm. I mean, the sound of it and the relaxing nature of it. And then also what I noticed when I was there, it might have been a windy season for Tokyo, or maybe Tokyo is windy or whatever, but the way the trees are and the wind would go through it, and you'd hear that, and then the water and everything, wonderful. They also have a traditional tea ceremony house in this garden, and a lot of tea ceremony houses, they like to be in gardens because going through the garden before you actually do the tea ceremony is kind of like the preparation for it. It kind of relaxes you, gets you in tune with nature and with something more basic than just walking into a space, okay? So they have a traditional tea ceremony house there, and 3 days a week they perform a tea ceremony, and they also give classes called the Art of Japanese Tea. ceremony there, which they'll teach you everything about it. So I think that's, I mean, that's about as authentically Japanese as you can get. Then they have also three other restaurants in there, and they're like, you know, teriyaki and different. I mean, I don't know if it's teriyaki, but it's very, these restaurants are very Japanese. They're very, their decor is on kind of the rustic side, a little open air, but not totally, real kind of basic, but very Japanese, very authentic, like I said. Day or night, no matter what season, you know, you stay at the hotel, their Japanese garden is going to thrill you and it will soothe you. And that's what it did to me. I mean, I likened it to a spiritual sanctuary where you could come to think, reflect, meditate, pray right there at your hotel. It's a, one of the, like I have said several times on the show, this is truly one of the most unique hotels I have ever been to. And there's no other hotel in Tokyo that has a garden spectacular like this one. And it was the main reason why I chose to stay there. And it was the best part of my stay there. The Japanese garden gave me really some of my most memorable travel moments for my whole trip in Japan. It set the tone for me and what I was going to experience in Japan that I really didn't totally expect to go down that path. So it helped me get into the right mental space and to understand and experience Japanese culture, which is heavily grounded in nature. So, you know, Catherine, I know this has been super long answer to your question, but dealing with the Hotel Otani, this hotel is really difficult to describe without all of this detail. But I think the listeners, you know, should have a pretty good idea now of why the Hotel New Otani is such a great place to stay when you're in Tokyo. Because it's affordable luxury at its best, and it is uniquely authentic Japanese establishment. No other one is like that in Tokyo.
Well, we did promise a promotion that we'll be giving a how-to tip. So why don't we turn to doing that right now? And I will remind everybody that the how-to tip is brought to you by the Astrid Travel Club. And Astrid, so this is a little bit, there's a little bit of a controversy that is woven into this question. And I really am looking forward to hearing your take. And that is this, which is more important for you in picking lodging, the customer reviews or star ratings and why?
Okay, I'm going to try to keep this answer pretty simple and to the point, but I think we should do a whole podcast on this because there are lots of things that are in these customer reviews and how the metrics work and how it affects the ratings with the hotels, et cetera. I mean, you know, things have really changed, and I think consumers need to know how to have more discernment. So I think when researching on how to bottom line this, to answer this question for the show, I think that I want to do a whole show on this.
Okay, I'll make a note right here.
Yeah, and I think this is going to should go in our travel, in our podcast series about how to make travel happy and stress-free. You know, how to stay happy when you're traveling, how to mitigate the things that cause stress. And so this being, knowing this rating system and how to really discern and to pick your accommodations is the beginning of your trip. It really is, because where you stay, like I said, is so important to the quality of your travel experience. Okay, both of these are important to me. But before I really answer the question definitively, I'd like to share some basic information about star ratings and about customer review metrics, because I think our listeners really will find it interesting and informative. Before the internet started and before TripAdvisor, the star rating really was the all-important hotel selection process for most travelers. I mean, you had Forbes and you had AAA, and what they said was the gold standard.
That's right.
You also had Michelin, which was also very good, but Forbes and AAA was it. If you got a Forbes 5-star rating, you received an Olympic gold medal, basically, because you could not and you can't influence the rating. They send in an inspector. Routinely, they have a 500-point checklist. 30% of the items on the list deal with facility, and 70% deal with service. So, you know, the rating can only be received on merit. There's no influence by the hotel or the group or whatever. Right. And service is the most important measurement. How well-trained your staff is, how welcomed and nurtured the guest feels. And reading this, all I could think about is the hotel, New Otani. They were the best trained staff I have ever seen. And I always felt so relaxed and happy to be there because they made you feel like that without even talking. So that's what well-trained staff. Let me tell you, that doesn't come naturally. But now, you know, more and more people are searching for their lodging accommodations online. So they're not just seeing what Forbes or AAA are saying. They're going to the websites, booking.com, hotels.com, Expedia, TripAdvisor, Kayak, and they are using them as their filters, or they look at the star ratings, the price, amenities. You can plug in all these things that you want. Anybody who's done it, they can see. They can pick their location that they want, and it comes up with, oh, there are 10 hotels there in your price range, your location, you know, good customer reviews. They can do all these filters, so it helps you to waddle through all this.
Yeah.
But what the statistics are now showing is that the customer reviews are now more and more important in the hotel selection process. It's not just the star rating. It says 96% of the people feel like reviews are very important. Yeah. 79% of the people read 6 to 12 reviews before they book. I mean, that's telling you it has changed a lot. TripAdvisor says 83% of the people that make their booking choice, they base it on the reviews. That's how strong it is. So dirty rooms, poor service, hard beds, worn out decor do make a difference. And the only way that a potential customer can really know this information is from an independent review. In addition, the statistics show that 79% won't book a hotel that doesn't have a review.
Mm.
So reviews are important.
Yeah.
I mean, they have eclipsed the star rating. Also, thoughtful responses by hotel management are really important. 4 out of 5 people believe this shows a hotel cares about their guest experience. So, like most people, customer reviews are the most important of the two measurements for me. You know, I know the star level that I want, but those can be suspect. And in certain areas, it can be bought. You just cannot totally rely on that anymore. But you can do a lot of skullduggery into the different hotels that you're keying in on, and you can come to the conclusion, yes, this is one I'm interested in, or no, forget it. But those customer reviews are really good, okay? Basically, this is kind of what I do. You pick your star rating that you desire first. Then you muddle through and you whittle it down to the top three. And these are the ones that have consistently the highest reviews. I mean, 98-99% of their reviews are like, oh my God, this hotel was unbelievable, because, you know, they would wake me up every morning at 9 o'clock with a free cup of coffee in bed or something like that. I mean, you know, whatever it is that you really catches your eye, but you know it's real. It's not just you know, the hotel or somebody.
Fake, yeah.
Yeah. This is not, you know, bots going to work for somebody. And then what I use, I go to the next level. I go to YouTube videos, and this is my last step, and I look at those hotels. I look at the hotel videos they generate, and then the bloggers or the other people. That's how I make my final choice.
Oh, good. Okay.
So I do it with star rating, lots of customer reviews. Then before I pull the trigger, I look at the YouTube videos, and then I say, "Yeah, this is the better one of the three." So you know, that's how I do it, and that's kind of a very simple, you know, star rating versus customer review. Feedback.
I like it because it digs into how you do it. And this is your superpower, in my opinion. So very good for doing that. Thank you, Astrid. This how-to tip was brought to you by the Astrid Travel Club. All you have to do is go to astridtravel.com. Right there on the homepage is a tab that says the Astrid Travel Club. And we'd love for you to click over there and see if the Astrid Travel Club is right for you. This is for people who want mindful travel. They're kind of in the same mindset of Astrid and what we present here on Solo Travel Talk. There are some wonderful tours that are coming up. It's for people who want to travel solo, but maybe not completely alone. And they, of course, have the Astrid flair. So we invite you to go over to astridtravel.com. Click on the Astrid Travel Club and find out a little bit more. And we thank the Astrid Travel Club for sponsoring this how-to.
My pleasure. And I want to just put a little plug for the club and our trips. The itineraries that I have created for these first two trips, one is to Cartagena and the other one is to Marrakesh. They are great itineraries. They do have the Astrid flair to them. They're guaranteed basically to really understand the culture, have a lot of fun, but also I'm very big on free time and good rhythm to trips. All the, you know, it'll be small groups, fabulous hotels.
Of course.
They're really special because I'm so big on authentic travel. And the trips will be really to only one city, so you don't have to be packing and unpacking. But I'm really excited about what we're going to be doing with these trips and the future trips in the club. So go to the website, check it out, and you know, see if there's something you'd be interested in.
Before we close out the podcast, Astrid, you used a word a minute ago, or you used a phrase a moment ago that is kind of at the core of what you do, and that was affordable luxury. And I'm just wondering, as we close out here, if you could say, how does the Hotel New Otani compare to your standards of what it means to be affordable luxury?
Without a doubt, the Hotel New Otani lived up to my concept of affordable luxury. I mean, you know, I don't mean to laugh, but for starters, it was so fairly priced, $298 a night. They could have easily charged $500. And depending on the season, it will go up to about $450. And the different rooms obviously can go up a lot higher. But an overwhelming amount of amenities. I mean, you can spend your whole time in Tokyo there and be happy and be pampered. I mean, you'd miss Tokyo, but you would be in its own way a Japanese kind of Shangri-La. So, I mean, it is affordable and it is luxurious. So it is right on that. Plus, on that concept, it had impeccable service. Top-notch concierge. Those women at the concierge desk were delightful for starters and helped me every day manage my time and my logistics, which is very hard in Japan because the language barrier is something that you're not prepared for. I mean, when you're using your Google Translate to try to translate kami and you can't really just talk to people and you're trying to use Google Translate. I mean, it is something. It's very difficult and it makes it to where you don't or you aren't able to easily navigate yourself from point A to point B. So they were great in helping me be able to do that as efficiently as possible. uniformed staff everywhere. And they were always, you know, you walk past them, they give you that bow. I mean, everybody is just so relaxed, refined, and respectful there. The service is fantastic. Cultural authenticity, traditional Japanese hospitality, for sure. And I did share this earlier. The secret, I think, is that this hotel is third generation Otani family still owns it. Because I did ask the concierge, I said, this hotel is just so wonderful. I said, you know, it's big and everything, but there's something so special about it. And we were talking, she said, I have to tell you, the Otani family. And she began to tell me how much pride they had in this. And that, you know, every guest is important to them and how they imbue that in their staff and their service. And it just comes through everywhere. So, you know, it's traditional Japanese. It functions well, okay? And then the spectacular Japanese garden. There's nothing like that. So I'd say, yes, the Hotel Otami is affordable luxury at its best. So when traveling solo to Tokyo and you're looking for the best luxury hotel that won't hit you too hard in the pocketbook, look no further. Hotel New Otami. New Otani is definitely, like Catherine said, you don't even really need to do the research anymore. I did it for you. I've told you about it. If this is not what you want to, type of hotel you want to stay in, I understand. But if this is the kind of experience you want to have, look no further.
When I saw the website, I was a tiny bit surprised that I didn't get an email from Astrid saying, hey, Catherine, I've moved to Japan and I'm living at the Hotel New Otani.
Yeah, really? It just suits me so perfectly. It did.
Shopping, restaurants, glorious luxury. I was like, oh.
But it's not over-the-top expensive.
Yeah.
And in a big city like Tokyo,
it's like
London, Paris. I mean, you can blow through your pocketbook.
Well, we loved hearing about the Hotel New Otani. You can find everything about this podcast and all of Astrid's entire Japan series, plus all of her normal adventures at her website, astridtravel.com. Don't forget, of course, you can go and find out about the Astrid Travel Club. Same place, astridtravel.com. And then there's a tab that says the Astrid Travel Club. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, your favorite podcast app, and we would love to see you there. You can download, you can subscribe. We love all of those things. It helps other people find the show. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you at the Hotel New Otani in Tokyo. Thank you for listening.
Sayonara.
Sayonara. Bye-bye.
Find Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. All things Astrid, including the Astrid Travel Club and this podcast, are available at astridtravel.com. Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk.